Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
June 10th, 2007, The Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, Photoshop Interview, Part 2. I'm back with Kevin Connor and Dave Story this week, and we have even a longer segment. It runs, the chat with them runs well over 20 minutes. Some really good stuff. We have a chance to drill down deeper into some of the topics that we started last week, but really kind of getting into some of the more, you know, esoteric and developer and interesting aspects of Photoshop CS3 and a little bit about how it compares to Lightroom and maybe some of the plans for, you know, the direction of Adobe Camera Raw and Photoshop and Lightroom. Lots of good stuff from the people that are right in the middle of creating it, and I think you're going to enjoy it a lot. So I'm going to run the interview right now, and then after the interview, I'll come back and we'll do a little virtual camera club business. But right now, let's get to Kevin and Dave. Here we go. I want to touch a little bit on Adobe Camera Raw for a little bit. This is an area where we're seeing a big evolution. I became familiar with a lot of the tools in Adobe Camera Raw through Lightroom, and then now I'm seeing a lot of those same sliders show up within Adobe Camera Raw. Can you guys talk a little bit about the changes in Adobe Camera Raw and kind of the direction, you know, that we're going with this? It is a very compelling tool and a fun tool to use right now. And if you're doing global changes, a lot of times that's as far as you need to go, because you can even work on JPEGs.
I think that, you know, what we've tried to do in the last 3 years, really starting out and accelerated with us getting to join forces with Pixmantech and the talent in that little company, was really to assemble the best possible team and to really think about what is the new workflow for the best quality photography. And so, of course, that's RAW, because, you know, you've got so many more bits per channel. You've got, you know, 12 bits instead of 8 most of the time. And so you've got all this more data. You've got so much more ability to recapture things. Techniques that we've known about and that we could have used now become relevant because we've got so much more data. But at the same time, you have so much more data, and so it's slow, it's laborious. Early on, while we made it fast, we needed to make it even faster. And so when you talk about those sliders, and you know, there's so much attention to detail and arguing and blood, sweat, and tears and even some bruises that go on behind every algorithm in there.
I've heard about the bruises, yes.
Yeah.
But you can remove those in Photoshop.
Yeah, we did. We airbrushed the bruises out in the team photo, and there's no black eyes showing, and we'll never say who actually won the argument, because really it's about, did the customer win? But even the order of the sliders we argue about to make sure it's clear, like, okay, so you do this and then you do that. You know, you should be thinking about it in this order, because if you do this one first and then do the next one, it might wash out the previous one and you get confused or frustrated that you lost your changes. But I really feel like what we've done over the last couple of years is just assemble the absolute best talent that we could possibly have on this, because we think it's critical to the future of photography.
Now, Adobe Camera Raw is looking a lot like the Develop module in Lightroom, or the Develop module in Lightroom is looking a lot like Camera Raw. So is there information sharing here? What can you guys tell me about this?
We made a commitment internally that we were going to make, that it was really important to maintain compatibility between what you do in Lightroom and what you do in Photoshop. And so, you know, the beauty is that, you know, we already had, you know, Camera Raw team, and then we had this Lightroom team, and, you know, we've sort of had this more people thinking about the problem and how can we innovate and start doing much more effective controls in there. So there was some cross-pollination that, you know, went on between those groups. Based on the timing of these releases, you know, the good thing was that we were able to get all the controls, you know, in for both of them. But we certainly, because of the Lightroom project, we were able to advance Adobe Camera Raw and Photoshop probably more than we would have otherwise. And I think, you know, the same will be true in reverse. There's this nice cross-pollination that happens. What we have a firm commitment to is always maintaining the compatibility. So if you do something in Lightroom and then you try to open that file in Photoshop, it should render it accurately in the same way you would see it in Photoshop. Now, over time, we want to keep Lightroom free to evolve and innovate in its own way. We don't want it to be, you know, that's the beauty of having a separate app, and we have a different interface on it and have done different things. So it may be that over time you may see somewhat different controls in Lightroom than you see in Adobe Camera Raw and Photoshop, but we still want to make sure that that file, if you define something in Lightroom and open it in Photoshop, it will render accurately. So that's sort of the connection that we've drawn between them right now.
Yeah, I definitely see the cross-pollination, but I also feel just a wee bit of competition there too, you know, between the applications. And I suppose you guys probably don't want to comment on that one way or another, but I think that if that's true, that's actually a good thing, because I sort of feel like you said earlier, that if there hadn't been a Lightroom, I would be curious to see what Adobe Camera Raw 4 would look like without, you know, you guys having the Lightroom project going. You know, it would be interesting to me to see if it took the quantum leap that it did from, you know, ACR 3 to ACR 4, because ACR 4 to me is a whole other world, as is Bridge 2.0, which is just fabulous.
Yeah, I think that, again, I'll give you a more concrete example. If you put the right talent together and you say, do this right once, you get so much better results than if you say, well, this is kind of a feature of the product, but, you know, we'll kind of get it right, or we'll do a little bit and then we'll see if somebody else does it better over here. In a sense, you know, is there competition in the same way that there's competition in a family? But everybody wants the family to be successful. And what we're trying to do is build absolutely the best engine so that you can render raw files in all the workflows. And, you know, Kevin mentioned Lightroom and Photoshop. You know, we have the little brother Photoshop Elements, which, you know, can render those files as well and benefits from Camera Raw 4. But also things that people aren't even aware of is how much raw photography is invading the film and video world. I don't know if you saw the movie The Day After Tomorrow, but Stu Mashewitz at the orphanage created New York City by going to New York City and taking photographs of buildings, then building 3D models and mapping those raw images onto the buildings. And in the process, kind of pushed the After Effects team that this work was done in to add raw processing. So the Camera Raw engine is actually used in our motion graphics engine for After Effects. And when you start to get that broad and you start to think about raw images invading print workflows, going into newspapers, into magazines, being the preferred source of digital imaging, that's one of the other reasons why we have the digital negative format. So we can carry a single format through with no sidecars hanging off and getting lost along the way, all through these workflows. And we can preserve multiple renditions, et cetera. DNG really enables those kinds of workflows that people may not even know about today.
So since we're off the beaten track a little bit right now, let's wander a little farther off. I want to talk a little bit about some of the more creative or esoteric uses of Photoshop that you guys are seeing. Talk a little bit about how Photoshop's maybe being used in the forensics world right now. When you have an application this powerful, then suddenly, you know, people want to use it to get their job done. What's some of the stuff that you guys are hearing or seeing about or even planning?
I'll pick some of the sort of more specialized and out there things. You know, I was just a few weeks ago in Washington, D.C. and visited the, you know, National Center for Missing Children. And they actually use Photoshop extensively there in doing both age progression and regression, you know, showing people under, older and younger in a variety of ways. And they were actually using Liquify, because what they would do is they would take a picture of the child that was missing, and they'd take a picture of an older relative and superimpose that. And then they'd use Liquify to reposition the features of the face to be the relative proportions of the older relative. And then doing some additional editing on top of that, they found they could get a pretty reasonable in the ballpark of showing what that person would look like when they're older. So it was sort of like a form of morphing from younger to older. But now, you know, when I was visiting them, they're actually doing a lot more with 3D modeling as well. So I think some of the stuff we've added in Photoshop Extended is going to be very relevant for them there. So, you know, that's just one example, but it sort of you know, blows your mind to see all the different ways. You know, again, it's this fact that people, you know, like when we added Liquify, no one was thinking about, oh, we can use this for age progression. Yeah. But people figure out interesting ways to apply it, and they develop their, you know, I think one of the reasons people think that Photoshop is difficult to use, that there's a big learning curve, it's not that individual features are challenging. The thing is that you can know every single feature in the application and how to use it, but you will never know all of the techniques and all the ways to combine them to do interesting things.
I'm just really happy to hear that there's a really good use for Liquify, because outside of, you know, demo stuff. Well, what's some of the stuff that you've been keeping your eye on, Dave?
Well, one of the things, you know, kind of from Innerspace and Missing Children, although that is one of the awards that I'm proudest of seeing in the trophy cases I walk by every day, is the award for helping them find a large number of missing children through better image processing. Let's take it to outer space, astrophotography. You know, a lot of photographers are really interested in high dynamic range photography because you can capture a much broader range of the image and that's in the scene than a camera can capture in one frame. And you can represent much more accurately what the human brain processes out of a bunch of different, if you will, exposures of looking around the scene. And so you can have, you know, details in a light bulb and details in a dark shadow in a room. And that's how you remember the scene, although there's no way you could take a single picture and capture that. So high dynamic range imaging is really hot, and we've been pushing that through more of the product. And actually this year at Photoshop World back east, I met with, you know, an astrophotographer who's working at Caltech, actually the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. So they say that sometimes Photoshop users are rocket scientists. Well, this guy actually is, but he was using it, and he's basically exploring the cosmos. We have so many great images coming in from satellites, from the Hubble Space Telescope. How do you put those together and look at them in an application that you can actually use? And he's used to using these horrible scientific applications that barely do what they're supposed to do because the guy did it, you know, in a couple of weeks. And here we're spending a couple of weeks sweating over every detail. And it was really amusing because actually someone came in and said, oh, there's a horrible bug in the high dynamic range. I've got this space shot and it's all black. No matter what I do, it's all black. And I said, wow, you know, well, have you, you know, what range of the image are you looking at? Because your display can only see 8 bits. You know, this is a 32-bit image. And he went, oh. And we readjusted it. And all of a sudden, you know, there's this beautiful shot of the Horsehead Nebula just came out. But he was looking at the wrong range of the data in the image.
Now, you know, you can do so much with Photoshop, and a lot of people are very good Photoshop technicians. So sometimes an image could be presented as being maybe how it was taken out of the camera when actually there's been a lot of work going on behind the scenes here. Now, there's actually stuff built into Photoshop to help kind of go back and see what's been done on that. Isn't that true?
Yeah, it's kind of an oxymoron in that here we are making these incredible tools for image manipulation, and they're being used very aggressively in commercial advertising. I mean, they use it everywhere. And yet, at the same time, we were sitting here and saying, you know, how do we help people to detect counterfeiting or forgeries or tampering or images that are supposed to be telling the truth but are actually telling lies? Mm-hmm. And while we all know that it's possible to do that with just, you know, a Brownie camera or a, you know, just any camera you can tell a lie with based on how you position it and how you present it, it's so much easier now with tools like Photoshop to manipulate reality. And that's fine in almost all circumstances, but there are some circumstances in truth-telling where we feel like we have an ethical obligation to help people to detect lies. And so we've been thinking this way for a number of years because of our ethics, not because we thought it would make more money. It just seemed like this is something we need to do because with great power comes great responsibility. And so probably the earliest thing we did was to start to work with law enforcement agencies so that they could, in a legal environment, manipulate an image so that they could get the point across, but be able to show that they hadn't done anything unethical. And that first feature that you can see is, in fact, if you just open up the preferences panel, you know, hit Command-K or Control-K, there's a checkbox that says, you know, edit history. Turn on the edit history log. And what it does is it will actually allow you to record into the image or into a sidecar textual description of everything you've done to that image. Timestamps, you know, I brushed here, I opened this image, I, you know, used the brightness contrast, you know, with these settings, I did the following.
Everyone in the jury goes, oh, he used brightness contrast.
And so the idea was to give people who are trying to show that they only did acceptable things, the ability to prove what they did, and not to have the opposing, you know, attorneys say, "Well, yeah, you opened that in Photoshop, so it's all garbage." Mm-hmm. You know, can't be admitted as truth. Mm-hmm. So that's the beginning, and that's something that we've been working for years. And there are actually standards now built around how to use that, what guidelines to use. The FBI has guidelines. The SWIGIT, SWGIT, has guidelines. Scientific Working Group on Imaging Technology. And they have guidelines for how to use digital imaging tools in evidentiary circumstances. Mm-hmm. But then about 3 years ago, we found out about this guy at Dartmouth, and we started to partner with him. His name's Hani Farid. He's the head of the computer science department there. And he was working on how to detect fake paintings, actually. Mm-hmm. And he was using advanced math to figure that out, statistics. And it evolved into something, and now we've been partnering for a number of years. It evolved into the ability to say, statistically speaking, I believe I can prove that this area of the image has been tampered with. And so we now actually have prototype plugins for Photoshop where you can say, let me look at this region of the image, and I can detect whether the clone stamp has been used, whether an image has been altered since it came out of a digital camera, whether it's still the original digital shot, whether the lighting is improper. And I can give examples of each of these kinds of circumstances where with each one of these tools, we're able to detect more and more different kinds of tampering.
That is really cool stuff. And I take it that when you have the edit history checkbox checked, then that's not editable, keeps track, and that's it. You know, you can't go in and edit that, right?
Right. So within Photoshop, there are no tools to do it. Now, I want to be really clear. Right. This is an arms race, right? And I know who's going to win, and it's not going to be us. Yeah. What we're trying to do is to make it easier to detect and to raise the bar for people who are tampering with images so that instead of it being, you know, a rank amateur or a novice or an average user who can get away with this stuff, they have to really be an expert.
Yeah. You can hack the edit history, for example, if you want to. But, you know, the types of thing we're investigating is, you know, should we be putting, you know, more security on that, for mm-hmm. example? I mean, we have technology we use on the Acrobat side around digital signatures and checking whether, you know, document has been changed since it was signed and so forth. You know, so, you know, the thing to investigate is that relevant on, you know, on the photography side? Should we be doing something like that with Photoshop files?
My last question for each of you really is just on a personal level. What in CS3 really lights you up? I mean, what do you really like, you know, when you look at CS3 and you fire it up? What are the features that either you're most proud of or that just personally resonate with you the most?
So, you know, off the top of my head, I would have to say just in general, Photoshop Extended gets me very excited. Because, you know, it's something that sort of took shape over time. We had this initial idea of what it would be, and then it sort of grew from that. But it sort of blows the door open wide in terms of directions we can go with the product. I mean, when you start looking at the 3D and the motion stuff and the way people are applying the stacking things, it's just, you know, it's just opens up this whole new world of possibilities where sometimes, you know, people are always saying, well, how can you ever come up with more features to do in Photoshop? Haven't you run out of things? And we never run out of things for the Photoshop core. And I still don't think, you know, even between Photoshop and Photoshop Extended, we're not going to run out of problems we can solve with the core Photoshop product. But, you know, my mind just starts racing when I look at where we started to go with Photoshop Extended and where we can go. So that's sort of exciting.
I would definitely say that. And I would also probably guess you guys have a pretty good idea of some of the stuff that's going to go in Photoshop 4 because, I mean, these are long product development cycles, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. So we've already, obviously, we have the list of the things we didn't get around to in CS3. And, you know, we're already in the process of sort of finalizing, you know, what our main goals are going to be for CS4. So we have a good idea, and we're also, you know, we typically do roadmaps that are like, you know, three versions out what we want to do, and those will shift over time. But
okay, Dave, how about you?
Well, I think from a photographer's perspective, you know, the thing, it actually links two things together for me is the image alignment and the auto blend. Mm-hmm. And it links two things in my mind. One is that I'm horrible at like saying, oh, I'm going to bring my tripod and I'm going to take the perfect panorama and I'm going to have it offset and have the image plane exactly rotating about the center axis. And I bought one of those things and I never really used it. You know, it's like too much of a hassle. It's like, dang, the sunset looks great right now. Let's get this shot. And I want to get the whole family while they're still playing in the yard. And I'm too close to them to actually take, you know, just one shot. And so being able to solve that practical problem and just a mind-blowing new way, and then find the stuff that you could do that we didn't even think we could do. It links back to what Kevin was saying is, you know, will you ever run out of ideas? And frankly, right now, there is so much great technology that is possible to bring to customers that there's more stuff than we could do now than we could in previous years. I mean, you'd think, oh, back in Photoshop 1, there was so much stuff to do, and you've solved all these problems. You know, what's left? The reality is we solved all those problems so we could be standing on the top of the hill. Now we're looking at mountains. I mean, there's so many great research areas. 2D is coming together with 3D. Image processing and statistics are coming together that gives you things like stacks and medians. The performance and our ability to bring that research out of our research labs and to partner with universities to bring that into the product has kind of brought a whole nother spark into the organization. The other thing I would say is I'm just really proud of the people on the team. People do not know, Photoshop team is not a big team. We fit on one floor of this building. We have people in other locations as well. We're distributed, but it really is a family. And what this group of people have accomplished in this cycle of changing the way we do development so that we don't kill ourselves, so that we have high quality all throughout the process, so that we can get releases out to customers really early. We put the first release of Photoshop CS3 out about 9 weeks after CS2 shipped. And we started collecting feedback and seeing, well, what can we do better? What can we do, you know? And as a result of the changes, which are wrenching for people in the way we did development, I believe we're set up now, and we proved it in CS3, that the quality level stays higher. Therefore, we're less out of control, right? Because software is a chaotic business. We're less out of control. We're better able to respond to customers. And we're able to do things like turn around and say, you know what? Our Macintel customers have been waiting for a long time. Let's do a public beta of Photoshop. Never been done before. And I can still remember the meeting where there's this big meeting like, well, should we do this? You know, what are all the concerns? If we're going to do it, we got to do it right. And everybody, you know, all these questions on the marketing and sales and other you know, disciplines. And then they turned to engineering and we're waiting for engineering to say, can't do it. And we looked at each other and we said, yeah, we can do it. And the whole room was like, what? Really? We can do a public beta this early? Like, yeah, how soon do you need it? And it was because of work we've been doing for a while to change that. And so that's why I think we have to do these great things for customers. But the team is so tight and so effective and so passionate. And now I feel like our processes are much better at supporting us in delivering what we want to deliver rather than being obstacles to getting out there.
So the other perfect storm for me that's come together just in wrapping and kind of piling on there, I have a great computer now that I really like. I mean, with a real processor. I have a capture device that actually takes pictures. I mean, you know, I'm using a Canon 5D right now, and it's capturing great information. And then I have software that, you know, instead of spending all my time trying to fix pictures to make them look like photographs that I took with silver film before, I'm now actually, that part, I'm getting at capture and the processing is easy. Now I can look at my photographs and say, well, now what do I want to do with it? And I have software to do that. So that's sort of my perfect storm, and I really appreciate your guys' contributions to that. Kevin, thanks for sitting down with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks.
And Dave, good to see you again.
Yeah, thanks. I love talking about what we do because we all love it so much. Yeah.
All right. Great show, guys. Thanks so much.
Okay. Well, thanks again to Dave and Kevin. I really appreciate them taking time out to talk with all of us about Photoshop and Lightroom and Adobe Camera Raw. And I found it really interesting, and I hope you did too. Now on to a little virtual camera club business. First of all, the photo assignment for June is before and after. And this is where you're going to take a shot that you like, a shot that came right out of your camera, and you're going to send that in along with the edited or manipulated version of that shot. Now, it doesn't have to be anything where you just go crazy with it, you know, where you suddenly change everything to purple and you know, reverse it and all that kind of stuff. It can be, hey, here's the way that I took the shot, and then after doing a little correcting and cropping and things like that, here's the shot that I ended up with that I liked. So, you know, obviously we're going to want to be able to see some differences, but you know, it doesn't have to be something where you go absolutely gonzo crazy. Now, that being said, if you do want to go absolutely gonzo crazy, be my guest because those are fun too. So there's lots of latitude here, lots of room to work before and after. get your two shots in by the end of June, and I think this is going to be a real fun gallery. Now, speaking of galleries, over at the member photo gallery on the Digital Story, which is based on our Flickr public pool, lots of good shots streaming through there. If you haven't had a chance, take a look at it. There's a link right at the top of the page that says Member Photo Gallery. And of course, you can go over to the public pool, and the link is on the Member Photo Gallery page. You can participate in the discussions there. You can contribute photos for shots that have the critique tag on them. You can, you know, give your photographer's comments there. And if they don't have a critique tag, you can say, hey, you know, really like the shot, or hey, you know, almost there. But, you know, probably don't want to go into too much depth unless you see that critique tag on there. Have lots of fun. Go over there. We've got a really good community. You know, it's basically our virtual camera club, and we're getting new members all the time, and it's a lot of fun. It has a lot of energy, and I hope you have a chance to take a look at it. Grab shots are rolling in. Keep them rolling. I love them. I love them. I love them. And one final note, special thanks to our two sponsors, Expo Imaging, the makers of Expo Disc, the best way to create custom white balance settings for your camera, and also Photomagico, the best slideshow for the Mac, probably the best slideshow software in the world. There are tiles for both of them right there on the Digital Story. Click on them and go over and take a look. That's it for this week. I will be back next week with another show. Thanks so much for stopping by. Go out there, take some pictures, send them in, do your photo assignment, participate in the Flickr public pool. Have a great time, and I will see you here next week. Bye-bye now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, weblogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.